thank you to David and Leah Unger for sponsoring today's Chaya Vishkavas Aranyol Ida Sorshal Memorial Shir. They are sponsoring, the Ungers are sponsoring Le'ilui Nishmas Paul Cohn, Moshe Eliyahu Ben, I forgot his father's name. I don't think it's on here anywhere. But here's Neshama Shehaven Aliyah. I believe it's this week. Yeah, on Thursday. Okay, we are in Parshas Tzav. Tzav, page 568. 568, Tav Kuf Samech Ches. Sachakta, that's with a sin. I got nothing. I'm sure I could put some more time into it, but I won't. We parsha Tzav 568 in the Art Scroll Chumash. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor tzaves Aaron v'yaspanav lemor zos toras ha'ola. We're continuing with the discussions of the karbanos, and specifically the categories of karbanos. There are always exceptions to these different categories, but it's always good to also be aware of the sort of the general structure of how every kind of carbon should be brought with different permutations. So this one, interestingly enough, gives us a different kind of carbon. If you look at the second pasuk, so it says, this is the ola, hi ha'ola al mokta al hamizbeach. This is one of the types of olas that you can bring, is kol halayla ad haboker, all night until the morning. What does that mean, all night until the morning? You can't bring karbanos at nighttime. Right? We have Pesach coming up. Sorry to say, we can't hide it anymore. It's Pesach. You know, get ready, physically and spiritually. And as we know, the Karban Pesach was brought in the afternoon of the 14th. I mean, that's the real Pesach, right? What we call Pesach is really Chag HaMatzos, according to the Torah. But we call it Pesach, doesn't matter. At least not for right now. And for the Chag HaPesach itself, meaning the 14th of Nisan, the Karban Pesach was brought at what time? It was in the afternoon, but as early as they could. The Gemara in Pesachim says that they would put the Karban Tamid. I believe it was after the Karban Tamid, if I remember correctly. But they would make it as early as possible, the Karban Tamid, like right in the beginning of the afternoon, and then the rest of the day they would, you know, devote to the Karban Pesach. But it's because they only could do it during the daytime. Once it's nighttime, you can't bring karbanos at nighttime anymore. That's when you had to have your Seder, right? What we have today is, you know, not even a vestige. It's just like a reference to the fact that they used to, you know, celebrate. They would have their Karban Pesach at nighttime because they couldn't bring the karbanos anymore. It's too late. You can't bring karbanos anymore. So what carbon are we talking about? Hey, Rose. What carbon are we talking about when the Pasuk says that they would bring it at nighttime? Anyone know? Anyone know what they would bring at nighttime? It would burn all night? No? No guesses. This is referring to, Rashi says, let me see Rashi for a second. Ha'inyan hazeh ba lelamed al hekter chalavim ve'evarim shehayakasher kol alayla. They could burn the extra fats and limbs of karbanos all night, all the nighttime. So what's it referring to? Not karbanos at all. It's referring to burning the extras. When we talk about an ola, carbon ola, specifically an ola, as opposed to the all other karbanos, an ola is entirely burned up to Hashem. There's nothing about it that is left over. So that's what it's saying here. It's not always easy to burn, you know, entire animals, especially when the ola, which is the form of the nedava, the voluntary karbanos, you could have a lot of them. And the pasuk is teaching us here that you could use the nighttime to burn the extras. You have to burn some of it already right away. The carbon tamid is an ola, like an olas tamid, ha'asuyah b'har Sinai, as we read on Rosh Chodesh in Parshas Pinchas, right? That's also an ola. The tamid is brought entirely to on the Mizbeach, but it takes a long time. Does anyone know the importance of this? I don't want to call it carbon, but the importance of this avoda in terms of her everyday life. This is, as we know, there are two opinions as to the source of our davenings. Right? We have three davenings on a typical day, Shachris, Mincha, and Maariv. The Gemara in Brachos says that's either based on the Avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, or lots of drushes to be made for that, right? Avram is Shachris, Yitzchak is Mincha, Yaakov is Maariv. Or it's based on, no? Keneged Tamidin. That based on the carbon tamids of the day. Now the big shaila is, wait a second, the carbon tamids, there are only two carbon tamids. Esekeves echa taseh baboker, v'esekeves hasheni taseh ben arbaim. There are only two tamids. So what does it mean, keneged tamidin tiknum? What does it mean? It's that the three tefillos that we have are in juxtaposition or in parallel to the karbanos. There were only two karbanos. So this is what it's talking about. Maariv that we have today, Tfilat Aravit that we have today, is modeled after not an exclusive independent carbon, but instead based on the leftover fats and limbs that were burned all nighttime. Which is why Maariv, you can technically daven Maariv all night. There's another opinion that you should do it before Chatzos because, you know, we don't want you to get too ahead of yourself and forget about Maariv, fall asleep, and whatever. But I've davened Maariv after Chatzos before. You know, getting home after a long road trip, or, you know, I remember in Eretz Yisrael, I was in yeshiva, and luckily for me, I went to yeshiva next to the Kotel, and there's no greater minyan factory than the Kotel, and I went down at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I got a Maariv minyan. You don't have to wait, you have to wait a little bit, but that's the nature of the place over there. So that's based on this. And what's the importance of that also halachically? That qualitatively, Maariv is different than Shachris and Mincha, whereas Shabbos and Mincha, which are connected, the Karma Tamid shall Shachris and Karma shall Shachar, the Karma Tamid shall Ben Arbayim, the Maariv is not obligatory, at least at its theoretical level. It is obligatory today, but in a different way, because the Jewish people have taken upon themselves the Daven Maariv. But technically, Maariv is what we call a Rishus, Tfilas Maariv Rishus, that's based on this Pasuk. Because this pasuk is saying we're burning the leftovers. There are times where there were no leftovers. Let's say there were no voluntary karbanos brought that day. Just the karban tamid. I think that happens on Shabbos and Yantif. You can't bring voluntary karbanos. No other olas. So then the whole karban was burnt up. What would they burn at night? Nothing. So there was no maariv that night. Right? So that's why maariv is not obligatory. It's voluntary, at least theoretically. Practically, again, it is obligatory, but that's this pasuk. He ha'ola al mokdal mizbech olay la'rabok v'esh ha'mizbech tukad bo. Esh ha'mizbech tukad bo. What does that mean? Esh ha'mizbech tukad bo. The fire of the mizbech shall be maintained there. I don't know how to translate. Shall remain a flame on it. So this is possibly a and you see it again in the few pasukim at the bottom of the page or at the bottom pasuk hey here. V'ha'esh al hamizbeach tukad bo lo sichbe. There are two obligations. There's number one, to maintain the fire on the mizbeach, and secondly, to not extinguish the fire. Those are two separate things. One is to keep it, you know, to keep it going, and the other is to not extinguish the fuel or not extinguish it actively. I often think of this. I'm sure there are a lot of Bali Musa talk about this. But Eish Tamid Tukal Mizbeach Lo Sichbe, it's repeated again in Pasuk Vav. I think about this. I think the Sefer HaChinuch explains the purpose of this is to have sort of like an equilibrium or a constant fire, a constant desire for Avodas Hashem. It's not too much, it's not too little. It's not too little. It should never be extinguished. We should never lose the passion for Avodas Hashem. And on the other hand, it should never be too much. We shouldn't overdo it. Who overdid it? Anyone? Nadav Avihu. That's the exact example that Sefer HaChinuch brings. You shouldn't overdo the fire, which is what Nadav Eish Zara, right? Which we'll see, you know, next week. I think next week. I think it's in Shemini, right? And instead, we should have this constant fire. A constant fire, not too small, not too big. A Goldilocks fire, if you will. And then we go into the Karban Mincha, and it talks about the Kmitza and the whole stuff with that. How to bring the flour properly, not to have chametz. Someone sent me a video this week of a model, one of these like digital recreations of the Mishkan. And it had the Shulchan, which was not a Shulchan. I mean, they must have just literally translated the word Shulchan as table, because what it was is a table with a bunch of bread stacked on top of it. It was literally, I don't know how they, where they got this from, but I guess they missed all the art scroll pictures with all of the shelving. Either way, they interpreted Shulchan as what we call a Shulchan table. But no, you could tell they were like pitas. The way that they had depicted them, they were like pitas, and that's obviously against what we learned over and over again. Lo se'afa chametz. It's here again. You can't make chametz in the Beis HaMikdash. There's a certain aspect of holiness when you prevent chametz, which is what Pesach is all about. We don't have to go into it right now. Plenty of time to talk about Pesach. Not to clean for Pesach, but plenty of time to talk about Pesach. And then you have the bottom here, at the bottom of page 570, you have the Karban of Aaron Uvanav in the time of the anointment. This is some kind of carbon, which was a one-time carbon, I think, right? I'm trying to look here. This meal offering is offered on three occasions. Every Kohen must offer it once in his lifetime. The first time he performs the temple service, the Kohen Gadol must offer it when he assumes office and every day thereafter. Okay, the Kohen Gadol would bring it every day. I didn't know that. And it has all these different flour and I think oil mixtures going on. Yeah. And then you have the chatas offering. And then you have right, the requirement to bring this if you did something wrong. There are complicated details here that I don't want to get too into because I don't know it well enough. But you have more of the asham, which is different than the chatas. The chatas is for like accidental sins. Asham is for purposeful ones. Willful violations, if you will. That's obviously only a general category. It's not for all things. You also have this is things that are that go to the cart to the Kohen. You have the bottom of 574, one of the two exceptions to the Chametz rule, the Karbanei Toda. The Karbanei Toda. It's a shlamim. A shlamim always means, well, I don't know what, bringing shlemut. We'll talk about that soon. But it also means that some of the people get to eat some of it. The shlamim is some given to the mizbech and some you get to yourself. The toda specifically is brought with a bunch of loaves of bread. I mean, there's some that are not loaves of bread. But then it says, if you see in Pasuk Yud Gimel, al chalos lechem chametz yakriv karbano. You should specifically have leavened bread for the karban toda, not with it, not on the mizbeach, but along with it, meaning that you get it. Famous, I think, comment of the Netziv, who I believe describes what's the point of all the bread. If you look, where is the pasuk? Let me see. I think there are 40 loaves of bread. I'm trying to find the pasuk. Does it not say in the pasuk? Is that? What? Is it? I thought. So where did we learn it from? I don't know. Okay, interesting. I thought it was in the pasuk. Hold on. I don't see it here. Yud Gimel Rashi doesn't say it. I don't know. Maybe Chazal interpreted somehow that there are four. Right, I see that. Maybe it's in a different place. I don't remember. But they say there are 40 loaves of bread. And then Siv explains why so much bread. And it's because specifically it's a carbon toda. The carbon toda was designed not for you to, you know, be grateful to Hashem just on your own, but to be grateful with other people. Just like Lahavdil, obviously, when it comes to the Thanksgiving meal, no one eats a Thanksgiving meal by themselves. You bring a bunch of people over, and you're grateful. Yeah?
It says 40 loaves here on page 75 in the English.
in the English?
11-17.
Mm-hmm.
Towards the end of that paragraph.
The Torah is eaten for a day and a night. Some of these are 2 days and nights between.
Accompanied by three legs.
Yeah, the Gemara says it is from. Gemara says it is from. The note here says it's from a Gemara in 77b in Menachos. Right. Okay, yeah, so I guess it's a drusha of some kind. Four different kinds of loaves. Four different kinds, 10 of each. I don't know where they got that from. Okay, either way, so the Netziv explains that that's why there are 40 loaves, because it forces you. You can't possibly eat 40 loaves of bread in one day. You have to share it with other people. And that's, I believe, the Netziv explains the purpose of the Karban Torah. What do we have today which parallels the Karban Torah? Anyone know? We always... No? Interesting. It's more of like a... more of a public demonstration of gratitude. Benching Gomel. We bench Gomel in direct proportion to the Karban Torah. The four examples of things, I don't know where Rashi says it here, but I'm sure he talks about it. There are four situations that a person has to bench Gomel for. If you get sick and then you get better, if you go out on a business trip and you make it safely overseas or over the Midbar, or if you were imprisoned and then you were released. I think those are the four. And obviously, those all have their own extensions. There's an interesting discussion to be had about how do you apply it today when you talk about going traversing through, you know, large swaths of land or going overseas on a plane. Is that the same level of obligation to bring it to bench Gomel afterwards? So I believe the Maharsha connects these four things to something which had to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the four cups of wine, all the fours, you know, connected to all the fours. But yeah, that's benching Gomel. The one is being sick and getting better is also related to women and childbirth. That's why women make bench Gomel afterwards. But also it has to be done in public, right? That has to be done with 10 people in order to bench Gomel. So the same kind of concept that your gratitude should be shared in public. Okay, if you go over to page 578, which finishes up the Karban Torah. So it talks about how to treat blood. You're not supposed to eat blood. If you look at Pasuk Chavav, V'chol dam lo sochlu, b'chol mosh v'sechem, la'of v'la be'ema. You shouldn't eat blood, some blood. It depends what kind of blood. It depends after you've kashered it to make it okay. Anyone else remember, you know, their mothers or grandmothers kashering with a bunch of salt, bring the blood out? People have told me, I've never seen it myself, but people have told me that they remember, yeah, the good old days, yeah. They showed you? It's a lot of salt, right?
Yeah.
It's a ton of salt. Right? But as we spoke about last week, the purpose of the salt is to bring the flavors out, right? It brings the blood out. You have to put it in there for a specific amount of time. Yeah. So that's this pasuk. B'chol dam lo sochlu, b'chol mosh v'osuchem lo v'la be'ema. Kol nefesh etochal kol dam. Anyone who eats blood, v'nichrasa nefesh ahimeyameha. They will be cut off from the nation. Interesting. I'm looking for other topics. But I'm thinking about, for this week, Shabbos afternoon, talking about the halachos of cannibalism, which sounds more graphic than what I'm... That's the response I was trying to elicit. But if we go away from what we consider to be cannibalism and think about other instances, what are the other instances that might be more relevant for the halacha of cannibalism? Let's say you get a cut on your finger. Can you suck the blood off your finger? Yes or no?
No.
Yes or no? We don't know. Have you done it?
Can you
do
it to save a life if you're sucking?
Oh, We're not talking about saving lives. Yeah, yes, of course. You can save lives, for sure. You get a paper cut. Can you put your finger in your mouth?
No.
Okay, could help. Could be helpful. The question is it halachic? So this is actually machlokas aposkim. It's machlokas, whether or not whether or not you're allowed to do it. The only reason you would not be allowed to is because people might mistakenly think you'd be allowed to with other animals. There is no prohibition of sucking your own blood. There's no prohibition of doing that. As the pasuk says, "V'chol dam lo sochlu b'chol moshe v'sechem la'of v'la'be'ema," to a bird and an animal. There's no such prohibition when it comes to human blood. There is, however, some level of prohibition to eating human flesh. We don't have to go into that, but you should know it's a machlokas. Some will say it might not even be asr midaraisa. It might only be asr midarabana. You never heard this discussion? Yes, Sarita, we're not talking about extending Sarita. You can do almost every isser in the book if it comes to saving a person's life. Almost everything you can do, you can violate for the sake of saving. I'm talking about the strict halacha. The strict halacha is that some people will say it's not a prohibition to eat human flesh. It's only rabbinically prohibited.
I'm not talking. I want to just sort of okay. Group of Palestinian, pro-Palestinian demonstrators, and someone asks you, are you Jewish? And you say, hide it to save your life. I mean, that article says you weren't supposed to. You were supposed to, yes, I'm proudly a Jew. Okay, get beaten up and get killed. Maybe.
I'm not really sure. It depends on the context, depends on the situation. There are two other instances people don't really know about in terms of not giving in to something. That's Shas Hashmad or Befarhesia, which we're not going to talk about now, but besides the big three that everybody knows about, giving up your life for, those are the other two situations, which were situational. They're not specific Isurim, but if something's in public or if something's persecutive, so then how do you define those moments? So that's a discussion.
Yeah.
But either way, there's a well-documented machlokas that happened at Yeshivat Har Etzion, and also colloquially referred to as the Gush. Mm-hmm. The Gush. And the question was, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zatzal, once said that if a person was stranded on a deserted island and all they had to eat was human flesh or pork, so then Rav Lichtenstein said, halacha would dictate that you have to eat the human flesh. And Rav Amital, Zatzal, responded, Rav Amital, the other Ashiva, responded that there's no way that Hashem would want you to do that, and sort of the morality that we're instinctively aware of was embedded within us because that's what Hashem wants us to do, to not eat the person. There are documented cases of human history where people have had to do this. There's a docudrama that just came out about a plane crash. People might have seen it. That was perhaps the most well-documented case of that situation. We don't have to get into it, but you should know halacha has something to say about it, and I may or may not be talking about it this Shabbos afternoon, in case you wanted to enjoy Shabbos a little more. But either way, let's keep moving here. Yeah, that's life-saving for sure. Okay, it goes into the sort of the complicated aspects of an animal and what goes to the Kohen, what goes to the Mizbeach. You can see that on 578, 580 now, we get into the final inauguration, which is what we're really focusing on today. This Perek Ches is essentially the final inauguration of the Kohanim into their Kohanic roles. Right, you can find that here. Vayidaber Hashem l'Moshe le'emor, kach asar v'yaspano v'ito, v'yes habagadim, v'yes shemen ha'mishcha, v'yes parachatas, v'yeshnei ha'ilim, v'yes sal ha'matzos. Right, they take all of this stuff, v'yes kol eidah ha'kel, get all the people together, v'pesach kol ha'mleid, v'yas moshek asher tzivah Hashem l'sov, v'atikel eidah, got everyone together, v'pesach kol ha'mleid. They brought them around to the Mishkan. Anyone know when this happened? What day did this happen? Close. How many days were there of inauguration? Close. Seven. The eighth day, which is next week, by Yom HaShmini, is the day that it started, right? So the 7 days of inauguration, the eighth day was the actual starting. But anyone know what date it was? Reina, if the first day of the Mishkan was Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so then this day is the 23rd of Adar, which is, I think, a week from today. What's today? The 16th, no? Mm-hmm. Yesterday was Shushan, today is the 16th. So that's a week from today is when this happened. And it describes what everything they did. That Moshe brought them close, and he put them in a mikveh, and all these interesting different things. He dressed them up with all the things that we learned about, you know, last month in terms of the Kohanic garb, and he anointed them with oil, and they washed their hands in the kior. Right, this is the sort of the culmination of everything we've been talking about. There's a whole question about why this is here. Why isn't it back in the end of Sefer Shmos, where it talked about the Mishkan and the beginning of the planning of all of them, and all these instructions were given back in Parshas Tetzava, as we'll see soon, but none of them were actually done until now. Actually, it's Rashi Ramban, as they often do, have a machlokas about that. Whereas Rashi says Ein Muktam Muchar B'Torah, Rashi says this actually did happen back when the Mishkan was instructed. It was just juxtaposed here because of the karbanos that are involved. Whereas the Ramban says, no, the actual karbanos were instructed, and then this was instructed because they had to understand the karbanos involved. But that's what you find here. If you look at Chamishi, you find Pasuk Tesvav. So as we said before, there were three animals. There is number one, and this is the first one. If you see Pasuk Yedalid, Vayagesh Es Parhachatas. The parachatas was the bull that was coming to atone for a sin. What sin? What sin could it possibly be atoning for? The chetzeiga, right? As we know, Aaron HaKohen was a pivotal player in that scene. How much fault is due to him and whatever? You know, okay, we can have that discussion a different time. But the point is, it was coming for number one for that. That's Vayishchat, Vayikach Moshe as Hadam, and Moshe shechts it and brings the blood and puts on the Mizbeach, etc., etc. And then you can see in Pasuk Yudches, Vayakrev as El Ha'ola. So the first one was a Parachatas. This is El Ha'ola, a ram for the sake of an Ola, that Aaron Ubanav put their hands on it, and then Moshe shechts it and they sprinkles the blood again. And then lastly, you find in Shishi, Vayakrev es ha'ayil ha'sheni, the second ram, which is now called El Hamiluim, the ram of inauguration. Vayismichu Aaron uvanav es yideim arosh ha'ayil, again, they put their hands on it, and now we have the word Vayishchat. What do we notice about that word on page, the top of 584? What do we notice about the word Vayishchat? The trup on top of it is a shalsheles. Oh, my old friend, the shalsheles, our old friend. We haven't seen a shalsheles in a long time. When was the last time we saw a shalsheles? Very good, Robin. By Yosef. Yosef fending off the advances. What? We're up to Chaf Gimel, 823. Ches Chaf Gimel, it's the top of 584. Vayishchat. Moshe Rabbeinu shechts the last of the rams, the second ram, in order as part of the inauguration process. The last time we saw, we went the entire Sefer Shmos without our old friend, without a Shalsheles. When's the next time we're going to see it? Not Bamidbar, not Devarim. There are only four of them, the entire Torah. I have them here on the sheets. What? Is by the next one is by Lot. This is Vayera? Might be still in Lech Lecha. I don't remember. When's Lot and Stone? I thought it was Vayera. Yeah, it's Vayera because that's after the Vayera is the beginning of the guests, and then it goes right to Lot. That's Vayera. Yeah. So this is, you have it here in second source, Vayismahama. We talked about that, right? Vayismahama, we said maybe it's really a conjugation of the words ma'ama. I don't know what to do. What, should I do this? What, this? I just, too many questions. I don't want to go anywhere. What did Rashi explain? You remember? Why was he pausing? Why was Lot not going ahead with the angels who were forcing him to get out? His money. He wanted to delay and keep all of his fortune. and you know he couldn't part with his property. So that was Lot. Then we have in Bereshis Chaf Dalet, Vayomar. Who is this Bereshis Chaf Dalet? Eliezer, Parshas Chayesara. What's he doing? Hashem Elokei Adoni Abraham, Hakreina Lefanai Hayom Vaasei Chesedim Adoni Abraham. Do kindly with my servant Abraham. What does that mean, do kindly with him? Good, to find Rivka, what was ultimately going to be Rivka. At that time, he was just davening, please Hashem, bring me a soulmate for Yitzchak, basically, by doing chesed with Abraham. And remember, why would there be a shalshels on that word? Vayomar. Good. We know from the word Eli, the word is Ulai, but it's spelled Eli, right? The word was spelled Eli. Rashi says, quoting the Medrash, that Eliezer wanted his own daughter to be the one to marry Yitzchak. So here we have Lot was pausing, hesitant, didn't want to leave because he didn't want to give up his possessions. We have Eliezer pausing, hesitating. He doesn't want to give up the prospects of his daughter marrying Yitzchak. And then lastly, we have, as Robin said before, the case of Yosef. Vayimain, and he refused. We talked about that one also. He refused to give in to Eshes Potiphar. This also, a hesitancy, indecision, not wanting to give in. There could be also a medrash that goes into this, because he knew that he was going to have, you know, descendants from Eshes Potiphar. So what does that mean? Is he supposed to do it? Is he not supposed to do it? Maybe there's indecision there. Or it could just be as the conventional wisdom is that he had indecision about doing such a terrible thing. And his desires were about to get the better of him. And as the Gemara tells us in Sota, he was able to overcome them. So that's the three that we've already seen. The case of Lot's hesitancy, the case of Eliezer's hesitancy, and the case of Yosef's hesitancy. What in the world? One of these is not like the other. What does Moshe's shechita of the El Hamilum have to do anything with anything? Why is that here? So first of all, let's understand a little bit more about the El Hamiluim. What is this ram? What does El Hamiluim represent? So the ram of Miluim. If I were to ask you, how do you translate the word Miluim, what would you say?
Malay.
Malay, right? Which means? Full. Complete to full. Okay, now we're getting somewhere. What does that mean? Full, complete?
Finish.
Okay, good. Says the Ramban in source Hay over here. Kvar Peirashi, this is on the pasuk here. Ki inyan hamiluim shetiyeh lehem yad shleima la'avod es avodas Hashem. That they had a full hand, meaning they were completely justified now in doing the avodah. V'yomer kem b'mizbeach atzmo v'ha'ovdim v'hinei kol ha'karbanos ha'elu b'ayim l'malei es yadam. It came to fill their hands, to sort of make them fully capable, if you will. The second ram, we already brought the par, right? That was the parachatas. We already brought the el haola. This is the second el. This is the second ram. Hasheni el hamiluim ba'avorshu sof hakarbanos halalu. This is the last of the karbanos. Ubo, and with it, timale yadam vechanu lefanav yisbarach. They will finally be worthwhile kohanim that can then work, serve Hashem. Levarish ki kula ma'akvin be'inyan v'yitach ki achadas l'chaper elam izbeach l'kashu ken kasiv. The ola lahartas al kohanim. The chatas was in order to be mechaper. The ola was in order to make the kohanim favorable to Hashem. Kikaparas kol olas nadava. It's also a way of sort of appeasing Hashem. We're giving this to you as a way of sort of getting in good graces with Hashem. Vashlamim, but the shlamim, the last one, which is what we're talking about here. Hashlamim toda l'Hashem shenasim lehem bebeisel v'chomosav yad. Thank you, Hashem, for giving us a place in the holy temple. Yad Vashem, a position. V'hinei hashlamim levadam bayim al milo hayadayim, miloi hayadayim, v'lokach yikra u miluim. So that's how the Ramban says it. If you look back, this all of this, by the way, was all instructed back in Tetzaveh. In the Parsha of Tetzaveh, Hashem instructed that when you ever finish the Mishkan, this is how you should inaugurate the Goanim. You can look back at it in Perek Chaf Ches. Rashi over there says, V'hilbashta osam ha'aron, osam ha'armurim ba'aron, choshen ve'efod u'me'il, k'son estashves, m'seves v'haneid, v'tzisum mechnasayim, aksum l'mat v'kulam. That's all the Kohanim Godolim clothing. This is what he's doing in this week's Parsha. Right? In Parsha's Tetzaveh, it was already laid out what he was going to do this week's Parsha. That word miluy was already there. Kol miluy, says Rashi, miluy yadayim lashon chinuch. Filling of the hands is the word of inauguration. When a person has sort of acquired a position, that's their job, that's what they're going to be doing. Uvalashon Laz, says Rashi, Laz usually means French, I'm not really sure, or Old French as it's called. Kishemimanim adam al pekidas davar, when a person is appointed to do a specific job, no saying hashalit biyado beis yad shel or. A person is given the figurative reins, if you will, right? You put something in your hand, you hold it, and you say, now this is your job, right? You give it over to them, they grab it. Shikorin gant. I don't know if that has any corollaries today. But gant belaz. V'al yado hu machzik badavar. And it's through the hand that you hold that, which is representative of the fact that you are now taking that. And that's what it means. Miloy yadayim. You're filling the hand. Rashi says, miluim doesn't mean the culmination of something. It means the beginning of something. Interesting contrast there. I'm not really sure what else there is to say about it. But Rashi says, miluim is milashon milo yadayim, that you're filling their hands. You have now sort of given the baton to the Kohanim. They have grabbed it themselves. Now it's their position, their possession, their new position. The Ramban says no, that the miluim is a reference not to, as we said before, not to the fact that they're holding something, but that they have completed something, like Adina was saying. V'alashon milo yadayim b'tarahu lashon shleimut. You have completed. K'lashon kimalu yamai uvimlos hayamim ha'ela. Anyone know that's from? That's from the Megillah we just read. Uvimlos hayamim ha'ela asa melech. Right? It says Esther right here, but the Suda of Achashverosh, that's when it's referring to, that he made the Suda. Ad yom melos b'hash limam, v'chein b'kesef malei. Anyone know that's from? Ephron. He gave him the full money. He gave him the full amount. You know, Ephron says, no, what's a few hundred bucks between friends? But he gave him the full amount. Mechir shalim v'hatam, what's the reason? Ki hazar asher lo tasi yado v'taraso. The stranger, meaning the person that's not appointed to that position, who doesn't have the tasi yado v'taraso, he hasn't had the level of purity, l'hakriv carbon, to bring a carbon, o lavo avodas hamalchus, or to be the person to do the service. Hine yado, his hands, chaseira ba'avodah hahi. They are lacking in that specific element. They are lacking in that privilege. And therefore, they are not malay. They are not full. They are not bishlemut with that area of expertise. V'chasher yichshar yikasher, maybe. Once the person has become trained, I guess, lasos kain, hine yado shlema, now their hand is figuratively full. They have accomplished what they're supposed to do. Ru'uya l'chol ha'avodas v'amlachos, they are now befitting, justified in doing that service. Ki ein avodas Yisrael l'Hakadosh Baruch Hu shlema ela beveis hamikdash v'chein el hamiluim beparsha hazos. This ram, this inaugural ram, shemiloi hakohanim bo ki chatas v'ola l'chaper. The chatas and the ola, as we said before, we're trying to get in good grace with them, either with atonement or by appeasement. Right, that's the par chatas and the el haola. Now we have the shlamim, we have the el hashlamim, the el hamiluim, v'zel males yado ba'akrava. And umatzasi b'targum Yerushalmi, right, the targum Yerushalmi, which is obviously very old, shetirgem el hamiluim de ashla musa. the fulfilling, the filling of, the final, the finalizing of the Kohanim through this ram. So what is this all to say? This is a turning point in Jewish history, really. It's a turning point in the process of the Jewish people coming out of Mitzrayim. What's going on, and why is there a shalshelus over the word Vayishchat? What we now know is that this isle, this ram, was representative of a finality, right? The finishing of their training process. But it wasn't just the miloy. It wasn't just the fulfilling of what Aaron and his sons were now training for, are now fulfilled by, right? The completion of their training process. But it was also, as we mentioned from Rashi, like a baton. What does it mean it was like a baton? Who brought all these karbanos? At the beginning of the parak, we saw in Parak Ches. Who brought them? Aaron and his sons didn't bring these kohanim. They can't bring karbanos yet. They have not had that milu yadayim yet. So who brought them? If you look back at the beginning of Parak Ches, Kachas Aaron v'yasbanav v'yitzov v'yasabigin v'yashem and hameshcha v'yasparachatas v'yashkan v'yilum v'yasolach v'yasolach. And he's talking, who's Hashem talking to? He's talking to Moshe. Vayakrev Moshe, Aaron v'yasbanav. Moshe is bringing the people in, and then he's giving them the clothing. And then if you look at Pasuk Tesvav, Vayishchat Vayikach Moshe Adam. It seems like, and the Mepharshim explained it more clearly, but Moshe is the one that shechted and took the blood. You look again at the bottom of Pasuk Yitess, Vayishchat Vayizrok Moshe Asadam. Moshe shechted the animal. Moshe sprinkled. And then you find at the top, Vayishchat Vayikach Moshe Midamo. Who's doing this one? Also Moshe. Aaron and his children, the Kohanim, have never yet brought a carbon. Until now, it's only ever been Moshe. Moshe is the one that's brought karbanos. But now, in this moment, Moshe is shechting this El Hamiluim and transferring over the baton. He's giving over the baton. Moshe is saying, this is my last shechita. And it was his last shechita of his life. Last shechita of his life. How much longer did Moshe live? 40 years. Almost 40 years. 38 years, whatever. This is the last moment that he can ever do shechita again. And he recognizes that because he knows that Aaron, he's now sort of, you know, propping up Aaron as the next Kohen, the Kohen Gadol. And he's, for 7 days, they did this whole process. He's been showing them the ropes. And now he's finally using his last shechita. And he has this moment of hesitancy, this moment of apprehension, saying, how could I not do this anymore? How could I give up this position? How could I no longer be the Kohen Gadol? You know, I have brought the Jewish people from such, you know, depravity of Egypt. I've brought them through the Midbar, or I brought them somewhat through the Midbar. I brought them the Torah from Har Sinai. We went through the Egel Azav. We went through the Mun. We went through all this stuff. That was all through me. That was all, I did that. I did all of that. And now, I'm doing my last karban. I'm no longer going to be able to do the avoda of the Beis Hamikdash. Of course, I'll be talking to Hashem. I'll be helping them. I'll be sort of the counsel, the guidance that they'll go to. But I won't have the ability to do the avoda of the Mikdash anymore. If you look at the Torah at the bottom here, the Baal HaTurim is most well known for all these little, sort of creative connections or explanations. But that's the Kitzur Baal HaTurim that people usually, for this is the Torah Ha'aruch, this is the expanded version. You know the first one of this explanation, but you don't know the second one. Back in Parshas Tetzaveh, when it talked about the Begadim, and it talked about all the things the Kohanim would wear. So what was unique about Parshas Tetzaveh when it comes to Moshe? He was the only Parsha since his birth until, you know, he starts talking in Devarim. Every single Parsha, Moshe's name is mentioned, except for Parsha Tetzaveh. What's the famous explanation we've talked about before? He said by the Egel Azav, Mecheni na misivracha, right? That's what you find here. V'yata Tetzaveh lo hizkir kan Moshe v'shem al shem. He's not mentioned by name, al shem, because Sh'amar Mecheni na misivracha ki kil aschacham afil al tenai hiba, right? Moshe Rabbeinu said that phrase, even though it wasn't necessarily, you know, the condition wasn't fulfilled, he still had to follow it because, you know, he said it. So for at least in a small way, his name was left out. V'yesh mefarshim, says the Torah, l'fi sheratza l'tzavos al inyan habegadim li'aron. that the pasuk of the parsha of Tetzaveh was all about teaching teaching Moshe how he would dress the Kohanim, the Aaron and his children. Moshe, Asid Lios Kohen Gadol, he was going to be the Kohen Gadol for a little bit, for this week. From the 23rd of Adar until Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Moshe Rabbeinu was the Kohen Gadol. V'haylo agimas nefesh laz kiro etal abagadim shahi re'uyim lo v'nil kechuyim menu. And it gave him an anguish, agmas nefesh, I don't know how you translate that, but an anguish of the soul. He was distraught over the fact that he had the Kohen Gadol garments. He got to wear them for 7 days, he got to wear them. And then, they're Aaron's forevermore. He would never be able to, again, wear the Kohen Gadol garments. Says the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu was particularly anguished by that. And therefore, in order to sort of prevent that anguish, they took his name off of it. He couldn't bear having his name associated with the Kohen Gadol garments, which he would never be able to wear again. And that's why his name is not mentioned in Parshas Tetzaveh. A fascinating explanation, and many sort of more modern, you know, commentaries talk about this is the purpose of this shalshalas. That's the real meaning behind the shalshalas of Vayishchat Vayikach Moshe Midamo. That specifically, this carbon is the last carbon Moshe would ever sheft. Forevermore, it's going to be Aaron's. It's going to be Aaron's domain. And you know, I a few times thought about the connection of this to the date that it's happening. Right, Moshe Rabbeinu on the last day of Adar. The last day of Adar is not just any Stam day. It's the last day of the year, the spiritual year. It's not the physical year, that's Rosh Hashanah. But it's the last day of the spiritual year. And I think about that sort of finality, sort of the year is ending, right? And the year and his job description is forever going to be different. Moshe Rabbeinu is no longer going to be the one that shechts the karbanos. And he has this moment of pause, of maybe apprehension, but also appreciation that now I'm giving it over. The Medrash talks about, I could have brought more Medrash. I think the Orach Chaim makes this point even clearer. I meant to put it on the source sheet. But the Medrash also talks about how Aaron didn't want to take the job, right? That's the next week's Parsha. And Moshe has to convince Aaron to take a job that Moshe himself wants, right? You imagine that? No, Aaron, you have to take this job. I really, really want it. But the better thing is for you to have it. And there's this sort of transfer, this transition that Moshe anguishly, if that's a word, with anguish, has to give over to his older brother because he knows that's the right thing to do. And that's essentially, that is the defining conflict, tension, that goes on throughout Parshas Bamidbar and Parshas Devarim, Sefer Bamidbar, Sefer Devarim. Moshe relinquishing ownership of the leadership of Klal Yisrael, which we've talked about before, Parshas Nitzavim, right, and how, you know, the word Nitzavim, there was a Matzeva, the Medrash says. And from this point on, Yeshua is going to be the leader, right? We know, we've talked about the Gemara and Sota, Yadalid, which talks about Moshe Rabbeinu wanting to go into Eretz Yisrael in order so that he could show the Jewish people how to do all the mitzvos. And Hashem says to them, no, it's fine. It's time for you to finally give up. Some people explain that in terms of Parshas Chukas, when he hits the rock and he doesn't understand that the nature of his leadership has to be different. As opposed to forcing things to happen through miracles, the Jewish people have to learn how to do it without being compelled, right? We've talked about that before in hitting the rock. We've talked about the Meraglim, how the Meraglim have to be the ones to sort of lead the Jewish people in. They weren't able to do it. So there's this transition already here going on where Moshe Rabbeinu has to give up a little bit of authority, a little bit of his influence. And, you know, I don't know what it means for us. I don't know what the take home is, but I think sometimes we get a little too possessive over the positions that we have, a little too possessive over the responsibilities that we have, and really somebody else would be better positioned in that role if we would just allow them to. And Moshe Rabbeinu is having this moment of clarity where he's saying, this is the last shkita that I can ever have. And he takes an extra few seconds, right? That's the shalshalas, that's the hesitancy here, where he realizes this is my last shkita. He's going to have another 40 years of life, but this is my last shkita. And at least according to one more modern commentary that I saw, he explains that the shalshalas has three steps to it. The first step is the anguish. I can't believe I can't have this anymore. The second step is the recognition that it's not meant to be his anymore. And the third step is the actual giving it over to Aaron. And he's sort of going through that I don't know what you want to call it, the processing, the stages of grief over losing his space in the Beis HaMikdash. Obviously, he continues to be the leader, but not in the same capacity. So I think in all those ways, we sort of, you know, have to keep that in mind, that even Moshe Rabbeinu had to give up. Even Moshe Rabbeinu had to give up his own position for the sake of his brother Aaron to take over. All the more so, we should humble ourselves. If somebody else is more capable at doing something, even if we've been doing it for a long time, even if we enjoy that position, whatever it is, apply it in your own life to recognize that other people are fit for the job and they should be the ones to take it over. But that's the shalshalos of Moshe Rabbeinu, the hesitancy even of, yes, Moshe Rabbeinu, to give up on what he wanted for the betterment of Klal Yisrael, to make sure that his brother could take over. Thank you again to David and Leah Unger for sponsoring today's shiur. Le'ilu Nishmas, Paul Cohen, is in Shem Shav and Aliyah.